Ready to find your next favorite podcast? Spotify makes it easier than ever to discover new favorites by previewing short audio clips before committing to a full listen. You can even watch some podcasts with video or just keep playing audio in the background. It's everything you want in one app. Music, podcasts, and audiobooks across any device. Play anytime, anywhere, any way you'd like with Spotify. Try today.
To be honest, I think every virus on the planet is really interesting, but I'm unusual, right?
That's Vincent Racaniello.
I'm a professor of virology at Columbia University, and I'm Earth's virology professor, as you may know. On my license plate, I have the word viruses.
I can't believe you got it.
Well, virus was not available, but viruses was. I tell you, I'm thrilled. I love it, and I noticed people...
I called Vincent because I wanted to talk about a particular virus. It's actually one of the deadliest viruses in human history. But I'd heard this hopeful thing that we might be on track to eradicate it completely.
We have done it with smallpox. We are almost at the point of eradicating polio. So even though it's mind-boggling, it's doable.
The disease? Measles. Today we are talking about a quiet, enormous human undertaking to wipe a disease from the face of the planet. I'm Flora Lichtman, and this is Every Little Thing from Gimlet Media. Measles may not seem like a big deal here in the U.S., because after the vaccine was developed in 1963, measles infections started to drop. By 2000, it was basically gone, and now it's big news in this country when several dozen people get it.
The measles outbreak in the state is growing.
44 people sick in Minnesota.
Most of those with the disease are unvaccinated.
We're going to be seeing this for a while.
This Minnesota outbreak is troubling because it's been linked to anti-vaxxer activism, and it indicates a drop in vaccination rates. But in general, here, where there's good health care, measles has a reputation for being mild. You get a rash, a fever. So mild that it can be a plot line for the Brady Bunch.
Oh, no. Are you sure it's the measles?
Well, he certainly got all the symptoms. A slight temperature, a lot of dots, and a great big smile.
A great big smile?
No school for a few days.
But in other parts of the world, it is a different story. Experts from the World Health Organization, the Mayo Clinic, Centers for Disease Control, paint a different picture.
It is a deadly disease.
While measles is one of the viruses which killed most humans in history.
We're looking at around 140,000 deaths in children every year from measles.
140,000 a year. For comparison, the Ebola outbreak killed 11,000. The people most at risk are living in parts of Africa and India, and the risk is highest for kids with malnutrition and vitamin A deficiency. But most deaths are from a secondary pneumonia infection, but the disease can also directly cause dangerous brain swelling. And its deadliness is why organizations like the WHO and the CDC want to try to eliminate it. Like, eliminate it completely. Everywhere. The idea that you could eradicate any virus seems amazing, but on top of that, measles presents some special challenges.
It is the most contagious human virus we know.
That's researcher Roberto Cattaneo of the Mayo Clinic. He has studied measles for most of his career.
More than 30 years.
He says measles is so contagious that one infected person can get up to 20 other people sick. And Cattaneo is famous, you know, in the virology world, for figuring out why measles is so good at infecting us. And he even has a musical analogy to explain.
A concert in three movements.
Which we are bringing to the next level of nerdiness by actually scoring it.
The first movement is the virus taking over the immune system, and it's an andante misterioso.
You inhale the virus, it hijacks your immune cells, and starts replicating.
The second movement is the rapid spread of the measles virus, and this is allegro con brio.
measles invades your windpipe, the perfect launching pad, and replicates even faster.
And then there is a Presto Furioso, which is the virus exiting the host with a thunder. It's three faster and faster tempi, which is atypical for a real concert, but that's okay.
This is why it's so contagious. Unlike other viruses, measles can get into your windpipe and use it like a trampoline, Catania says. And so a single cough can let loose millions of viruses. On top of that, the virus has this unusual ability to linger in the air for hours. So if you are unvaccinated and you go into a doctor's office or an airplane that has been visited by someone with measles,
you would all be infected pretty much because it's so contagious. When you talk, you're always making an aerosol, right? Especially with the plosive sounds, you know, the P's and everything. And these are tiny, tiny droplets. And if you're infected with measles, the droplets are full of virus, and those can float many, many meters away. And so whenever I see someone sneezing in public, I immediately say to myself, I wish you hadn't done that.
Well, I was just thinking, like, maybe this is a public health tip to tell parents not to name their kids Peter or Patricia or Paul, because they're going to get a lot more peas in their face.
That's pretty funny. But, you know, you can't avoid the peas, right? The best thing to do is to get vaccinated. For measles, we know it works.
You need 95% vaccine coverage in any given area to prevent measles from spreading. 95%. To achieve that worldwide, the goal of organizations like the WHO is to vaccinate every single child on the planet. Literally every kid everywhere on Earth.
We could eliminate the virus globally if we could vaccinate everyone.
But how do you actually do that logistically? What does it take to vaccinate every kid on Earth?
Allô?
Allô? Est-ce que c'est Madame Kashimi?
Oui, c'est bien moi.
Bonjour.
Bonjour.
This is Marie Kashimi. I called her up with our producer, Gofen Mputubwele. She lives and works in Lubumbashi, a city in Congo's Katanga province. And Marie works for MSF, Doctors Without Borders.
And she's been working for MSF for over 20 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Donc, elle a dit, wow. C'est, c'est, c'est.
MSF is one of several international organizations that partners with local health departments around the world to vaccinate kids.
Right. Measles vaccines are a routine part of childhood vaccinations. But there can be vaccination gaps, which could happen for a few reasons, like weaknesses in the health system or because of political instability. And so when there's an outbreak, the health department and MSF follow a very specific protocol. Step one is to confirm that there's actually an outbreak happening in a particular region or zone of the country. Under our national policy, when there are three positive cases in a month in a health zone, at that moment, there's a confirmed outbreak in that health zone. Once that's confirmed, word goes out on local news, health workers go out and talk to families, and finally people get vaccinated. And in the city, it's relatively straightforward. Health workers set up designated vaccination sites.
But in the remote areas of Katanga, the process gets more complicated.
It's like a mission, and it's, you know, like you have to strategize very, very well.
We talked to Marie's colleague at MSF, Barbara Saita. She went to Katanga in 2015 when there was an outbreak of about 40,000 cases.
So I was in charge with a team of the central part of Katanga, which have mountain and have lakes, two huge lakes. They look like a sea. So it was like, okay, that's just going to be interesting.
By interesting, you mean challenging.
Challenging. Challenging, and also, you know, you have to use a lot of your inventive, like how you're going to do that. So the first problem was many of the people living in the villages are fishermen. So they were living on the lake. And on the lake, you have like kind of small island. When you walk on top of them, they move.
It's like it's a wetland.
A wetland, exactly. And they build their houses, you know, straw and wood, and they live there for 2 or 3 months.
So the families are all living on these islands exactly. together?
The men, they don't go alone. They bring their wife, their children, everybody goes. So we were, okay, so we have to, you know, go to each one of those like small islands and talk with the people.
The first difficulty is getting to people. But then there's this whole other challenge, the cold chain.
Yes, the cold chain. Vaccines are very particular. You have to keep them consistently at the same temperature, which means between 2 and 8 Celsius degree.
Exactly between 2 and 8 Celsius.
If you go, you know, like higher or lower, that will damage the vaccine. And you cannot use it anyway. You have to throw it away.
How do you do it?
Oh, yeah, with a lot of work and a lot of sweat. That's how you're doing it.
Life revolves around the cold chain. It's a chain of logistics intended to keep the vaccine in that very particular temperature range. And in Katanga, where Barbara was working, she said that the temperature could swing from the 40s to the 90s in one day. So this means they have to plan careful access to refrigerators when there's power, and when there's not, it means thousands of ice packs and many coolers.
The one that, you know, sometimes you use to keep your beer cool during summer. Well,
I know that well, yes.
Exactly. We use them to, you know, keep vaccine at the right temperature.
Do you have an alarm or something that tells you if the temperature goes above 8 degrees Celsius?
Yeah, we have more than one. We have 3 different.
What does it feel like when the alarm goes off?
Panic, because when the alarm goes on, and they go on, let's say, in a refrigerator. And a refrigerator can hold between 18,000 or 42,000 doses of vaccine. So you can imagine when you have, you know, something wrong with the refrigerator, they panic.
Okay, so imagine this is your job. You're in charge of thousands of vaccines. You got to keep them within a few degrees in the face of 50-degree temperature swings. You have to vaccinate kids on a series of small islands in a huge sea-like lake, and you have to get to every single kid. What do you do? You set up a floating vaccination station.
Exactly. A vaccination station on the lake, and people were coming with their canoe and their children.
Is this the boat?
Oh, yes. This is the boat.
So it's like a flat-bottom boat with a shade, and there are probably, I don't know, 8 people in the boat, maybe 5 kids and a couple adults, and it's in the middle of the water.
Yes.
Wow.
It is. It was so nice seeing all this canoe coming from different, all the children inside. Oh, they are so cute.
And this is only the first few days of the vaccination campaign. Over the course of a month, Barbara's team of 50 people vaccinated 40,000 people in Katanga. MSF vaccinated over 500,000. And on the boat alone, they vaccinated hundreds of kids.
And it was amazing, you know, like being in the middle and all the children inside, you know, proudly with their vaccination card.
What do you mean proudly with their vaccination card?
They understand what measles is and what measles does. For them, it's not something, you know, they have to think abstractively. It's very real for them. In the places where we work, you don't have to explain to people, isn't it, why their children need to be vaccinated. They know it. They see it.
For me, this story puts the vaccine skepticism we're seeing in the U.S. right now into perspective. But it's also not just a U.S. thing. Italy is seeing a measles outbreak this year that's linked to lower vaccination rates. Marie Kashimi from MSF said that you also encounter skepticism among Congolese parents. And skepticism is just one of the obstacles to eradicating measles. War, migration, weak healthcare are going to make WHO's regional elimination goals challenging. But at the same time, mind-boggling things are possible.
You can vaccinate millions of kids in a couple of weeks.
That's Mark Papania from the CDC. He's working on planning a vaccination campaign in Nigeria that'll happen next fall.
If you organize it appropriately, you can vaccinate millions of to tens of millions of kids.
I don't understand that. Like, I can barely keep my calendar straight. I don't understand how much coordination would be required to vaccinate tens of millions of children in the course of weeks.
It's a tremendous effort. It requires an extraordinary amount of planning. And, you know, typically the planning has to happen so you can do the vaccination in weeks.
Do you think measles can be eradicated?
That's what my career is all about. Yeah, I think it can, and I think it should. It's just a matter of when.
This is maybe one of the most inspiring and heroic undertakings in human history. Weirdly, I don't think that's an overstatement. And it's not just an aspiration. People actually believe that we can do it. This is like building a giant cathedral or the pyramids. It's just at the end, there won't be anything to see. I'm really sorry about this transition, but after the break, I call my friend and tell him something grotesque.
Oh my gosh. No. Hello?
Hey, it's Flora.
Hey, what's up?
I just feel the need to immediately apologize.
For what?
For what's about to come next. This is Prashanth Venkat. He's a comedian, and we became friends working together on Bill Nye's Netflix show. Are you good with me recording?
Yeah. What is this for?
So I want to do this segment on the show where I share a fact that I think is, like, surprising or will be enriching. And the thing that I learned last week, I really think you will appreciate it.
Okay. Okay, cool.
Basically, I'm trying to cultivate Prashanth as my fact buddy. I am also trying to cultivate the term fact buddy. Here's the idea. You know when you learn something amazing or mind-boggling or perspective-shifting, and you urgently want to share it? You just want to connect with someone over this cool information. Doesn't need to be your soulmate. It can just be someone to have fun with. And maybe it's better when it's not complicated. You know what I'm talking about. No strings attached, facting. That's what we're doing today, and today's fact is about porcupines. Okay, so here's the setup. There's like one animal that can reliably kill a porcupine, and that animal is a type of weasel called a fisher.
Okay.
And I heard this from a weasel expert, this guy Roger Powell, who's been studying weasels for 45 years.
Okay.
I'm just going to play you a little clip.
A porcupine's face and a fisher's face are basically on the same level.
Okay, so could you hear that?
Yeah, a porcupine's face and a fisher's face are basically on the same level.
So that maybe, like, you may have a clue to what's going to happen next. Any guess?
I have some idea, yes.
Do you have any guesses?
I mean, I would imagine it has to do with angle of attack. So I'd imagine a face stab is about to happen.
You are very close. It is definitely a face attack. The fisher kills the porcupine by biting its face.
Fuck.
Now, porcupines don't want to have their faces bitten. I think that's fairly straightforward. And so porcupines try to protect their faces. So the fisher usually runs around the porcupine looking for a chance to dart in and bite the face. And of course, the porcupine stands in the middle and just rotates.
But here's the thing. It's not a quick fight.
Oh, no.
It takes 45 minutes.
Oh, my God. No.
It takes many bites to the face to lead a porcupine to have enough blood loss or maybe start to lose eyesight or its difficulty breathing because the nose is blocked. It's not pretty if you are not into predation.
It sounds like a horror movie.
Well, you know, if you're a porcupine, this is about as close to a horror movie as it gets. Fishers are wild predators. They're not thinking about the welfare and a quick kill for the porcupine. Fishers are thinking about dinner for the next 2 weeks.
When I heard this is kind of sick. I was like cry laughing when he described this.
Okay.
I just felt like it was so insane.
Yeah. And then it makes me think of the first fisher that figured out how to take down, like it was like a boss of a video game level. It like realized that if it just kept like hitting it in the chest, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, the like Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, go for the face. Go for the face. Well, I'm curious to know what about it felt so much more insane than any other sort of coordinated predator attack?
Are you trying to psychoanalyze me right now?
No. I guess for me, I think the stories that always blow me away aren't the ones of extraordinary violence. They're always little biological nuances that change big dynamics. I don't know if that makes sense.
You are making me feel so trashy right now.
That is not my intention.
Okay, so I guess I'm really into reality TV trashy science facts where animals get their faces bitten off. And Prashanth is into subtle ecological dynamics with big important implications. So if you have a fact that you think might actually wow Prashanth, email us at elt@gimletmedia.com. elt@gimletmedia.com. All right, thanks Prashanth.
Yeah, of course.
Bye.
Bye, Flora.
You may have noticed that we did an episode about measles and weasels. I just want to acknowledge that, and I want to lean into that rhyme scheme. We went there.
Every Little Thing is produced by Flora Lichtman, Christine Driscoll, and Ngofen Putubwele. Our senior producer is Catherine Wells. Our editors are Devin Taylor and Alex Bloomberg. Scoring by Martin Crane. We were mixed today by Dara Hirsch. Special thanks to Nicole Pasulka and to Matthew Bowl, who scored our awesome virus concert. We also have a new theme song, thanks to Dan Brunel for writing it.
Because we're still a new show, we could use your help. If you could review us on Apple Podcasts, we would really appreciate it. You can also tweet us at ELT Show, and you can find us on Facebook. Thank you for listening. See you next week.